Let's get this done. We are here, and you know how to reach us.
Seeking new talks with North Korea. It's Tuesday, December 17th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Afghans displaced by war, India's growing student protests, a southern home for Vietnamese refugees, fixing a common birth defect, and much more. All on today's VOA Asia. A senior U.S. diplomat Monday made a last-minute plea for North Korea to stop its provocations and re-enter nuclear negotiations, just ahead of Pyongyang's end-of-year deadline for nuclear talks. Stephen Biegun, Washington's special representative for North Korea, made the gesture in Seoul during talks with his South Korean counterpart, Lee Doo-hoon.
Let me speak directly to our counterparts in North Korea. It is time for us to do our jobs. Let's get this done. We are here, and you know how to reach us.
Biegun spoke just days after North Korea conducted two tests, apparently of engines for long-range missiles. Pyongyang has promised to deliver an ominous Christmas gift if the United States does not offer more concessions by the end of the year. The moves have intensified fears that major tensions could return to Korea in 2020, possibly derailing nearly 2 years of diplomacy between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Let me be absolutely clear. The United States does not have a deadline. We have a goal to fulfill the commitments the two leaders made during their historic summit meeting in Singapore.
In recent weeks, North Korea has expressed frustration at the United States' refusal to acknowledge its end-of-year ultimatum and has increased threats as the deadline approaches. Nuclear talks broke down in February when Trump walked away from a summit in Hanoi with Kim. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Frank Aum, North Korea expert at the United States Institute of Peace.
Frank, what's going on in North Korea, as you understand it? Why are they seemingly pulling away?
It's unclear because North Korea seems to want the U.S. to offer greater concessions before the end of the year, but then North Korea is not giving the U.S. the opportunity to provide those concessions in a potential meeting with Biegun and his counterpart. That's the unclear part. Clearly, it seems like North Korea wants the opportunity to hear more about potential concessions from the U.S., but it's not giving the U.S. the opportunity to present those concessions.
What about this deadline? Biegun does say, as far as the U.S. is concerned, there is no deadline.
Right. So it's North Korea that set the end-of-the-year deadline. My sense is that they don't want to be trapped in this game where they're in in dragged-out negotiations with the U.S. with no benefits to North Korea. It would be to the U.S. benefit to maintain negotiations while not providing the sanctions relief and other incentives that North Korea wants. So North Korea doesn't want to play that game. They don't want to get into dragged-out negotiations, it seems. So they want to. That's why they set the end-of-the-year deadline. But again, that's why it doesn't make sense. If you set the end-of-the-year deadline for a better deal from the U.S., but then you don't give the U.S. a chance to offer that deal, then I'm not sure what North Korea's strategy is here.
Will the United States, in any way you can see or predict, accept a reduction in sanctions or other demands that Pyongyang is making without giving up its nuclear weapons program?
It's hard to say because the U.S. Policy from the very beginning of the Trump administration has been not to make the mistakes that previous administrations have made. And one of the mistakes that they've identified is to provide relief from sanctions too early in the process. So they've said this all along, no sanctions relief until North Korea denuclearizes. Now, I don't know if that's just a talking point or that is, in fact, the policy that they intend to stick to. But it seems to me that North Korea is getting the sense that the U.S. is holding fast to that policy and we're not going to see sanctions relief. And that's why North Korea is not willing to engage in negotiations in any time in the near future.
But isn't this the fulcrum of the whole problem, that it is the North Korea nuclear program that is the center of attention and the center of many talks that might take place?
It is, but recognize that it's not a one-sided issue, and we can't expect North Korea to give up everything without getting equal and proportional concessions in return. So it's not just a denuclearization negotiation. It's a denuclearization and peace negotiation. So North Korea needs to take denuclearization steps, and the U.S. needs to take measures that provide North Korea confidence, which includes sanctions relief and other steps. Now, both sides have to realize that neither side is going to get a perfect deal, so the U.S. will not get complete denuclearization in the near term, and the North Koreans will not get complete sanctions relief in the near term. But that doesn't mean that we can't get a good enough interim deal where both sides get some of what they want, but not everything.
And do you think the U.S. government will accept something like that?
It's not clear. The U.S. seems to be suggesting that they will not accept anything less, but that seems to be how the process is playing out, because both sides aren't meeting. If both sides wanted to reach an interim deal, they'd be meeting at this moment.
Are we in a more dangerous, by we I mean the United States, is the United States in a more dangerous position than it was before these talks began?
Some people may argue that. Some people may say our hope was that by having the two leaders meet, that they could come to some sort of agreement, and we haven't had the leaders of the two countries meet before. Now that theory has been tested and the two leaders have met three times and we still don't have an agreement, then it's unclear where we go from here. I still think that both sides will be deterred from engaging in activities that are threatening to the other, but we're running out of options, and we may have run out of all options at this point. The U.S. certainly wouldn't like to see North Korea engage in provocative actions, but I don't think the U.S. will be pushing North Korea in any way in terms of additional rhetoric unless North Korea starts taking these provocative actions, and they may, but North Korea also is in a difficult position, because if they're too provocative with their actions, whether it's in nuclear tests or long-range missile tests, then they will certainly invite U.S. retaliation, additional U.N. sanctions, and perhaps even China withdrawing their support both economically and politically. So North Korea is in a tough bind too, but it's hard to see what other options are available.
Frank Aum, North Korea expert at the United States Institute of Peace. North Korea may give a hint about its future direction during an important meeting of the ruling Workers' Party of Korea later this month. Kim Jong-un's New Year's speech will also be closely watched for comments on the nuclear talks, and we'll have details when it happens on VOA Asia. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Trump and Hong Kong protests boost Taiwan president's approval rating. U.S. dismisses North Korea deadline, renews calls for talks. China calls U.S. expulsions a mistake. China's Xi Jinping says Hong Kong had its grimmest year since handover. In South Korea, Hong Kong's pro-democracy protests find support. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United Nations Refugee Agency is calling for intensified support for millions of Afghans who remain displaced after more than four decades of war. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA on the UN High Commissioner for Refugees' appeal to world leaders expected to attend next week's Global Refugee Forum in Geneva.
A record-breaking 70.8 million people globally are forcibly displaced by conflict and persecution. Among them are some 4.6 million Afghans. More than half are registered as refugees, and another 2 million are displaced inside Afghanistan. The UN Refugee Agency says Afghans represent the longest displaced and the longest dispossessed population in the world. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balosh tells VOA 90% of Afghanistan's 2.7 million refugees are in Pakistan and Iran.
In terms of their hosting countries, 1979 was the first year when Afghans started to flee the conflict. Today we are in 2019. After four decades and 40 years, Afghans are still being hosted by Pakistan, by Iran.
Balosh says Afghans are increasingly fleeing to Europe to escape the sharp deterioration in security inside Afghanistan and the growing financial pressure on their countries of refuge.
Afghan asylum seekers constitute the majority of people arriving in Europe in terms of their asylum applications. This year, we have seen in the Eastern Mediterranean around 70,000 in total arrivals via the sea. 37.4% of them are Afghans.
Balar says this mass exodus highlights the need for continuing protection and support for Afghans both inside and outside their country. The overwhelming majority of these Afghans, he notes, are young people. He says they are the future of Afghanistan. However, without international support, he warns their ability to create a peaceful, stable society will be difficult. He says less than half of UNHCR's more than $500 million appeal for Afghan refugees and internally displaced has been met this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham met with leaders in Pakistan to discuss a broader bilateral relationship with a focus on economic cooperation and peace-building efforts in Afghanistan. In his meeting with Prime Minister Imran Khan, Graham hailed Pakistan's consistent support in the Afghan peace process. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Glad to have you with us, as always, on VOA Asia. Protests in India have been escalating over the controversial Citizenship Amendment Bill, which will fast-track citizenship to religious minorities who face persecution in Afghanistan, Bangladesh, and Pakistan, but exclude Muslims. Students have been among those demonstrating, and they have alleged that police have used excessive force against them at a New Delhi university. VOA's Isha Sarai reports.
Overnight in India's capital, thousands of people protested outside the city's police station after authorities fired tear gas into the library of the Muslim-majority Jamia Millia Islamia University. University officials said that protests on and around campus were peaceful and that police entered the campus without permission. Hussein, a Jamia alumnus who asked to be referred to only by his first name, said his brother was studying for finals in the library when police fired tear gas shells and beat him over the head with batons.
I was outside of the campus. Behind the mosque, and I was saying that many people is coming from the inside the campus. So I texted my brother to come outside. Well, he came outside, but the police was there, and they beat him again.
Hussein said his brother was in police custody for nearly 3 hours before he was admitted to the hospital. And even then, officers were allowed in his hospital room when family was not.
He's fine now. He is resting. And he has taken lunch. And now he is resting. He has stitches in his head, around 5 to 6 stitches in his head. And a lot of blood was also there. He feels some weakness.
Police in New Delhi have denied allegations that they used excessive force, telling reporters Monday that they exercised the utmost restraint and used minimal force. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi appealed for calm Monday as protests continued throughout the country. Students of Jamia Millia Islamia University resumed their protests on Monday, marching outside the campus and in central Delhi. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Washington.
Much more on the growing protests in India can be found at voanews.com and on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, a southern U.S. home for Vietnamese refugees. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into food from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia, the Program for International Student Assessment, says Indonesian students are among the lowest performers in Southeast Asia. The report, released by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, says Indonesian 15-year-olds ranked at the bottom 10 across 79 surveyed countries. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, since the 1970s, more than 4 million Vietnamese have emigrated to America. Most of them are on America's West Coast, but a large group live in Texas and Louisiana in America's Deep South. That's where Teresa Nguyen ended up in 1979 when she came here with her family. VOA's Tra Mi has her story.
Louisiana is a deep southern U.S. state bordering the Gulf of Mexico and is famous for its developed fisheries. It is also where many Vietnamese refugees chose to live, where they came here in the 1970s. Teresa Nguyen is one of them.
I buy shrimp from fishermen, preliminarily processes, then distribute to big processing companies.
Okay, $1 a pound.
$1 a pound.
Her company buys seafood from fishermen, then resells to major seafood processing companies in the region. Nguyen was one of the first Vietnamese Americans to open a shrimp processing plant in New Orleans.
It is always super busy on weekends. It's more relaxing on weekdays with just a few boats.
Nguyen is now more than 70 years old, but for the past 20 years, she has been here every day during shrimp and oyster season.
I'm getting older, so I don't work as hard as I used to.
Nguyen's journey started since the fall of Saigon in 1975. In 1979, she, her husband, and five children fled Vietnam by boat.
After 5 days, we encountered pirates. We were robbed, raped.
A Malaysian ship discovered her boat of refugees, and she eventually came to the United States, settling in Texas, then eventually in Louisiana.
I sold shrimp on the street with my youngest son next to me. 2 pounds, 5 pounds, 3 pounds, strolling around New Orleans. My van was just an old one. No back seat. I put my son here next to me.
After many years of working, Nguyen saved enough money to buy a failing seafood processing facility. But getting started wasn't easy.
For almost 2 years, local fishermen did not want to do business with me. They would see me if they had just a few pounds. If they had more, they would go elsewhere.
Teresa Nguyen's facility continues to grow, but it's still not easy. She's been robbed by people and beaten up by nature.
Katrina destroyed everything. I lost all of my business. I'm now 71. I'm going to retire soon. But as long as God lets me continue, I'll keep working to take care of my children.
We thank VOA Vietnamese correspondent Tra Mi for contributing this report. You can see more online at our website at voanews.com. This news break from VOA Asia, Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen enjoys a more than 55% approval rating a month before she stands for re-election. A thorn in the side of China, her approval rating had plunged to 24% about a year ago. Mass protests in Hong Kong and support from the United States have boosted her popularity. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a cleft lip or palate is one of the most common birth defects among infants. In developed countries like the United States, corrective surgeries are often performed during the first couple of years of a child's life. But in some places like Pakistan, there are thousands of children with the birth defect, but not enough doctors who can perform the corrective surgery. Now there is hope thanks to a group of volunteers. VOA's Asim Al-Arani has more from Gujarat, Pakistan, in this report, narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
About 1 in 700 children around the world are born with a cleft lip and palate defect every year. In Pakistan, children not only have trouble eating and drinking, they're also facing difficult psychological and social challenges. A simple plastic surgery could correct the defect, but in Pakistan, many families can't afford the procedure, and even if they could, there aren't enough doctors who perform it, says experts.
There's a huge problem in terms of cleft in Pakistan. You have some very, very good local surgeons who are doing large volumes of cleft surgery. But the volume of cleft in Pakistan is so large that they cannot deal with all of these cases.
Hill is part of a charity program organized by Aisha Bashir Trust, which brings teams of doctors to Pakistan to help with the shortage of physicians. Dr. Hill is one of many doctors from the United Kingdom visiting Cleft Hospital Pakistan in the northeastern city of Gujarat to perform cleft treatments for free.
It's important, I think, to collaborate with surgeons from abroad to try and increase the training of local surgeons, and that's what we're doing here. There are local trainees and other local consultants that we work with.
Dr. Riaz, who works with the charity, says he's amazed by this simple display of humanity.
We need to praise the ones who come here for pure humanitarian reasons. Our senior colleague who started this whole charity in England has no connections to Pakistan, no religious reasons of being here. It is purely for humanity. And for the past 20 years, he hasn't missed a single trip.
Sadia is here today for a checkup. Her cleft procedure was done a while ago. Her mother still remembers the pain she felt when she was born.
When she was born and the nurse brought her to me, I felt very sad for her. But within 10 days of her birth, we were told about these doctors. We got their information and brought her when she was 4 years old, and her surgery was done then. Thank God for that, because today she is fine.
Speech therapist Dr. Rosie Slater says cleft surgery sometimes is just the beginning of the process.
The surgery only does so much. Speech therapy needs to go hand in hand with the surgery. So it's a really good opportunity to be able to come here and work as part of a team here to really help the children.
The doctors visit Pakistan twice a year for a couple of weeks at a time, performing hundreds of cleft surgeries.
It's not a job. It's a pleasure to do it. I really enjoy the surgery. And, I don't think there's anything that I do that's more satisfying.
A simple surgery and a rich reward of a lifetime of smiles. For Asim Ali Rana in Gujarat, Pakistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to tell us what's swirling around Jupiter.
This is Science in a Minute.
Data from a recent flyby of Jupiter by NASA's Juno spacecraft enabled mission investigators to discover a new cyclone near the planet's south pole. According to the scientists, the new storm is as big as the U.S. state of Texas. Shortly after arriving in 2016, scientists noticed that there were five large windstorms circling and forming a pentagon pattern around a central storm in Jupiter's southern polar region. This newly formed cyclone joins the five outer storms to expand the pattern from a pentagon to a hexagon. For the flyby, Juno was sent down to an altitude of only 3,500 kilometers above the gas giant's cloud tops. The Juno team also had to come up with some innovative measures during the flyby to keep the solar-powered spacecraft from going through what they say could have been a mission-ending eclipse. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can download our program. It's a podcast. You can take VOA Asia wherever you go. Just visit iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also see us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. We're on Instagram as well. And, of course, Facebook at VOA Asia. Plus, we want to hear from you. You can contact us any number of ways on any number of our platforms. Email's also an option, VOAAsia@voanews.com. We thank everyone listening on the radio, Chung Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan, Star Radio, FM 88.3. Hello to everyone there. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a nice day.